Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining today's ICCPR informational call. Report back the next steps in the ICCPR review process. I'm Yolan Tomlinson, the National Education Coordinator for the U.S. Human Rights Network. And for those of you who are new to this and not familiar with the network, we are a national network of organizations and individuals working to grow and strengthen people-centered human rights movement in the United States, where leadership is centered on those most directly affected by human rights violations and where the full range of diversity and community is respected and embraced. One of the ways that we at the network sort of do our work is by connecting members and partners to the United Nations mechanisms, in this case, the Human Rights Committee, which monitors compliance with the ICCPR, or the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. The ICCPR is one of three human rights treaties that the U.S. has ratified and is therefore obligated to adhere to ensure that our civil and political rights are respected, protected, and fulfilled. As part of this mechanism's work, the network has created an ICCPR task force, which is comprised of members who have volunteered their time to coordinate and educate anyone interested in engaging in the review of the U.S. government before the Human Rights Committee. Before I introduce our facilitators for the call, I just wanted to alert you to a couple items. First, the call is currently in lecture mode, which means that everyone except for the moderators will be muted, and until we open up the line for conversation and participation, at that point we'll begin to take questions. So there's one key way that you'll be able to participate in this process, and that's by using the raise hand feature, and you can do that by pressing star one. It then enters you into a queue, at which point I'll recognize you, and the system will notify you to ask your question. At the end of your question, you may lower your hand by pressing the pound sign. So our agenda for today is essentially, we want to report back on the recent trip to Geneva to inform the list of issues. And so in this first portion, we will hear from task force and non-task force members, advocates who participated in this process about their experience and the impact of doing so. Next on the agenda, we will discuss the list of issues and have some input on what it means if your issues were included and also not included. And then finally, we have some next steps in the ICCPR review process, where we will discuss the task force's work plan, as well as a list of resources and upcoming opportunities for you to engage both at the international and the domestic level. So today's conversation, call will be moderated by Jamil Dakwar and Nazrina Bargzi. Jamil is a director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Human Rights Program. He leads the ACLU international advocacy in the areas of counterterrorism, racial justice, immigrants' rights, women's rights, and criminal and juvenile justice. Jamil is also the co-chair of the ICCPR task force. Nazrina is a staff attorney with the Asian Law Caucus, where she directs its national security and civil rights program. She leads ALC's work on domestic and international legal advocacy around surveillance, discrimination, torture and detention, and speech rights. Nazrina also serves as co-chair of the task force along with Jamil. Nazrina?
Thank you so much, Yolande. Thank you for that great introduction into our meeting today. I wanted to get us started by just speaking for a minute or two about my experience going to Geneva, and then we'll hear from a couple more folks who were on the march. It was a real learning experience. This was the first time that I had engaged in international advocacy in Geneva. International forums are an integral part of my organization's advocacy and work to ensure compliance with basic norms in our efforts to protect civil rights and human rights in the national security context. And this was the first time that our organization had actually taken part in the ICCPR compliance process. We worked with several organizations to submit an issue statement on college-level student speech rights across the United States and freedom of expression protection in the ICCPR. So it was wonderful for me to actually be able to go and to meet with some of the committee members. During the trip, we had several briefings with committee members where our team presented the issues that we had submitted issue statements on, and then Yolande from the network presented issues that those of us in the room did not cover, and then we opened it up for questions. We also had several other impromptu meetings with folks in the UN field offices and just other people at the UN. There were so many great moments throughout the trip, but one of the moments that I'd really like to highlight and one moment that really captured the experience for me was the sense of pride walking out of our second set of team presentations. We were just masterfully moderated by EJIM of the network, and I think we all did a really great job of conveying to the committee members and to the staffer who was there that American civil society was extraordinarily engaged in this process and that we were going to do the hard work with them of ensuring U.S. accountability. So I just want to pass it on to the next person. Yolanda, did you want to go next about your experience?
So,
Yolanda, are you there?
I am. Sorry, I was on mute. As Naz mentioned, I was able to address those issues on behalf of advocates who submitted to the network, you know, that didn't have representatives in Geneva. And in particular, I represented a number of issues. I also sent out correspondences to, you know, those folks and groups to be able to send feedback on sort of key issues they want highlighted, because one of the things is that we had an hour for our briefing, and in that time, each of the presenters had, we had really 2 minutes to present. And so trying to basically make sure that we hit the salient points, but also give both sort of breadth and if possible depth and saliency of the issue. And so a number of the issues that I covered, for example, were around indigenous rights and rights of self-determination, including plenary power of the United States Congress, sacred sites, you know, the right to consult with indigenous peoples prior to making decisions. Another issue, for example, concerned freedom of association, specifically around the National Labor Relations Act. So another issue included the criminalization of homelessness. And so sort of the key points about each of these is that some of these issues from each of these categories were taken up and some were not. And so one of the ways that we engaged was essentially to, you know, say to committee members, given that I didn't have the capacity to address these issues in any fullness beyond sort of, you know, what you've submitted in your reports, was to say to committee members that if you have issues, if you have questions about these issues and need to follow up, that we would put you in contact with the organization that submitted these reports. And, of course, they had, you know, a few issues, but not to the point that they wanted to call and follow up on these issues. The great thing about having presented these issues is that some of these issues were taken up and others were not. For example, sacred sites were one of the issues addressed, whereas criminalization of homelessness was addressed but was put in a category that they felt it, you know, belonged with. So really, I saw my role there as presenting issues that are essential to our members and partners who submitted through us in light of them not being there. And I think it was successful in cases where it's included and, of course, in others that it wasn't. We also have Ed Hasbrook on the line who will be able to speak to his experience in Geneva. Ed?
So,
Ed, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hi. Some of the issues I raised of freedom of movement probably wouldn't have gotten the committee's attention at all if I had in the volume of written submissions, if I hadn't gone to Geneva. So it was worthwhile for that, and even though those didn't end up on the list of issues, they still generated interest and questioning from the Human Rights Committee, from others we met in Geneva, and from members of the delegation. There was a lot of information sharing, and I was really impressed. Many of us hadn't met before and weren't necessarily very familiar with each other's issues, but we really came together, I think, and presented a coherent, united front, and hopefully that will feed into more collaboration on our work back in the States, regardless of what happens with the committee. Oddly enough, the issue that we presented that did end up on the list of issues was one that didn't prompt questioning at all, which I think showed the importance of making a pitch in the written submissions that stood on its own. And just in terms of the reception, you know, I think the committee was overwhelmed by the volume of material they got, but also really clearly very grateful that they had received that volume of material. And although the process, you know, going to Geneva in this formal setting was intimidating, there also was a very genuine openness, and people shouldn't be scared out of going if they think they have something to say.
Great. Thank you so much, Edward. And do we also have Maxima on the line? And would you like to speak about your experience, Maxima?
Maxima, did you want to go ahead?
Here I am. Yeah, it was a life-changing experience for me, and I wrote an article about it on Med in America about really the moves, because I really had just come out of the state hospital 3 weeks earlier, and although I had not been drugged heavily, I just a light sort of it's a drug that I don't, it's a anti convulsant for epilepsy, and it's not even used for mental illness properly, but so I wasn't drug, and I had all these issues that the people that I had gotten to know their stories, and it just was an amazing experience of putting it together, the trip and getting there, and then it was such a warm reception that I felt. I felt that from the other people presenting. I felt that from committee members. People spoke to me privately, I just felt heard, it touched me deeply. It was good.
Thank you so much, Maxima, for sharing your reflections on the advocacy in Geneva and for your participation. It was important to have people like yourself speaking to the experience of violations of rights. And we are hoping that there will be more space and time for presentations by affected community members at the U.S. review. So we will definitely continue to be in touch as we plan our participation in October.
Thank you. At this point, we'd like to open it up for about 5 to 10 minutes of questioning, or if folks have any other comments. Are there any questions in the queue, Yolan?
Not yet, but if you do have a question, press *1, and I'll go ahead and recognize you. So we do have one question. I'll go ahead, Gaber, and ask your question.
Yes, hi, this is Gabor Rona, Human Rights First, and I wanted to ask a question about coordinating on issues concerning immigration court review of immigration detention, the problems concerning asylum seekers and others being detained without an immigration judge ruling on eligibility for release on bond or otherwise while they're pending proceedings, also in connection with immigration detention, the problem of prison-like conditions and detainees being required to wear prison uniforms while in immigration detention. And finally, also related to immigration, the question of and the problem of filing deadlines. Is there anybody who could say something about coordination of these issues going forward?
Thanks, Gabor. This is Jamil Dakwar from the ACLU. There has been, as far as we know, the two submissions, at least two submissions made specifically on the issues of treatment of refugees, asylum seekers, including issues of private prisons, by advocates for human rights, as well as another submission that was made by Women's Refugee Commission. There are a number of other submissions that raised different aspects of immigration, but also immigration detention. I believe Human Rights Watch submission had made also some reference to it. What we will be discussing on the call later on is the plan that we are proposing to kind of how to cluster and to kind of work in working groups and try to coordinate at the very least between the different organizations that have interest in addressing specific issues that are either included in the list of questions or will be included or were not included but are important enough to be brought to the attention of the committee before the review, during or before the review as part of the shadow report. So I want to ask my colleagues in case they have anything to add on this, but we will definitely have more to talk about the coordination moving forward.
Thanks, Jamil. If anybody else wants to address this question, I'd like to hear what other information might be available. But then I also want to ask a similar question about U.S. terrorism, counterterrorism-related issues.
This is Katrina. Go ahead, Jamil.
Go ahead. I'll answer the counterterrorism national security issues after you.
Oh, I was just going to add that we are in the process of trying to cluster the issues together, and we'll be, you know, helping people connect on those issues and how to submit the shadow reports to address those issues.
So we'll take the next question unless you wanted to add something, Jamil.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Gabor regarding counterterrorism issues or measures. And we had briefings, submissions that were made to the committee back in December by a number of organizations that addressed the counterterrorism measures, including ACLU, Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, the law firm Bringberg Pierce from the UK addressed the issue of particularly Guantanamo detainees, Columbia Human Rights Institute, and I think there are a couple others that I'm missing now. But the idea is, again here, Gabor, to try to coordinate the issues. A number of issues were covered, counterterrorism issues were covered in the list. We will discuss them a little bit later. And we will also say something about the preparation for the consultation that the government is organizing on May 30th. We will say a few words about it later on this call. Thanks.
So we have two more questions, and then we'll move to the next section. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, this is Khalil Abdullah from the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. I'm just wondering if the U.S. Human Rights Network will be providing a template for the shallow report process in a manner similar as was done for the list of issues submission.
Thank you for your question, Abdullah. We will most definitely be doing that. That is forthcoming, in, both in terms of talking about the shadow reporting process more generally, as well as talking about the resources that we'll have available. And so that template is actually being in the work, and we'll have several models to work with if it's an individual submission versus if it's a sort of joint collective submission.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we
we realize that there seems to be a problem for some people to join the call. Apparently, there are too many people who are asking to join in limited lines. So we're going to try to fix this. If Candice, if you're hearing this, if you could try to contact the service and add a few lines, because there are number of people are emailing us asking to join. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamil. Maxima, go ahead with your question.
Yes. This is Maxima. I want to say I'm speaking for myself. Tina's not able to participate for the Center for Human Rights for Users and Survivors of Psychiatry. I am very interested in the clustering process, and I'm looking into realizing that mental health diagnoses have been used to suppress protesters and blacks in particular, and this is continuing. I mean, there's been a book written and there's research done. Four times more blacks are getting schizophrenia diagnosis when admitted than whites. This is, I just want to put this out, and also whoever is brought up the issue of paddling in institutions and homes and schools, childhood drugging is now is considered by doctors, I can two that I know of in particular, to be child abuse. And I just want to put that out that we would really like to couple on those issues.
Thanks, Maxima. That's important, too, the issue about clustering. As many of you might have noticed in the email that was sent out for the Save the Date, as well as the last flyer on this call, we are asking you a series of questions to be able to gather that information to help facilitate the clustering process, but also to be able to help facilitate the coordination. And we'll speak to that later on in the conversation when we discuss next steps.
Great. Thank you, everyone. So let's go ahead and transition into doing an overview of the list of issues. Jamil and AJM are available to discuss that with us.
Thanks, Nas. So, AJM, I hope you're on the line. What we wanted to do is to just to do an overview, a quick overview of the list of questions that was released by the Human Rights Committee. We assume that you have you had a chance to look at it, review it. We're not going to spend too much time in looking at every single issue or question that was raised, but just to give you a sense of what this list is about and how does it relate to the next steps and the preparation for the U.S. review in October. One thing just to keep in mind is there were roughly about 60 submissions were made. At least 60 submissions were made to the Human Rights Committee back in December. That was the deadline for submissions from civil society, from NGOs. There were a number of submissions that were sent after the deadline, and in fact, they were accepted by the committee, even though it was not ideal for the committee to receive delayed or later submissions. They made an effort to bring it to the attention of the committee members. The procedure for adopting of the list of questions is for this committee is very very much of a I would say secretive process, because they won't let us know officially who are the committee members who are members of the mini task force that they create within the committee that take the lead on reviewing the materials and drafting the list of questions to the U.S. government. We had to guess, we had to find out as we were in Geneva who those members were, and simply because most of them showed up for most of the briefings or were more interested to meet with us when we were in Geneva. And you heard from other members and other colleagues about the kind of interaction with the committee. But right now, the committee has had difficulty in incorporating all the issues or all the submissions that were made. They made it very clear to us that while they appreciate the high volume of issues that were submitted, it would be extremely difficult for the committee to incorporate every single issue in the list of questions. And they made it clear that while this list is now been finalized, and what you have, even though it says advanced unedited version, even if your issue or your particular concern that you raised are not included in the list, there still be a chance to raise them during the review in October. But what that means is that you'll have to look at the list, see whether any of the questions that are raised cover your issue, and if not, then you will have to think about ways to start to consider how to put together a shadow report that will be based on the materials that you have, an updated material from the time that you that the submissions were made from December, if you made a submission. As mentioned earlier, the task force is developing resources, and we will have a template for a shadow report that will be concise and brief, because the committee asked for really brief submissions and not too long materials to be sent to Geneva. But most importantly, what will happen is that between now and the U.S. review, the U.S. government will have 60 days from the time that they officially formally receive the list to answer those questions in writing. And as some of you already know, the U.S. government invited civil society to a consultation on May 30th between 1 and 3 p.m. in Washington, D.C. There will be a chance for folks who are out of town to call in. We will not be discussing the preparation for this call on this call. We will have a separate call for this consultation that will be on May 20th at 4 p.m., and we will send a reminder and information about the call after this meeting. But what will be important is to know that the government will have a chance and will be requested, in fact, to respond to all the questions and the issues that were raised in the list. And that will be something that obviously we will have to then respond to in either shadow reports or later on briefing the committee members during the review in October. If your issue is not on the list, that's not the end of the road for you. There's still possibility, and some committee members already mentioned to a number of organizations who were in Geneva in March that they will be interested in raising additional questions during the so-called interactive dialogue. I wanted now to hand it over to AGEM, who has been also involved in other treaty body reviews, particularly with CERD, just to give you a sense of what this list means and how we used it in the past, and kind of share additional tips as to the list of questions and how is it linked to the next steps. Hey, Jim? Okay, I think AJ might have, I don't know if she's...
Okay, I've just been unmuted.
Okay,
Yes, so thank you, Jamil. And to everyone, particularly the task force members and the network staff who've been supporting the task force for all the fantastic work that you've been doing. So just a little bit, we've talked about the list of issues. I'm assuming most people on the call have looked at them, at the list of issues, but just in case you have not, it's a pretty comprehensive list. It covers a range of issues, but it's not complete by any means. So it talks about things ranging from implementation of the treaty at the state and local level, racial profiling, the targeted killings, the death penalty, to Guantanamo, shackling of pregnant women, a lot of issues around detention of immigrants, domestic violence, indigenous people's rights. There are a wide range of issues covered. However, like Jamil mentioned, there are some issues that were left out and some important issues that were left out. And this happened irrespective of reports submitted and people being there in person. And then some issues that were covered were not drafted in exactly the way we would want. Having said that, this is This is a first and important step. The list of issues is the first step in shaping the agenda for the review itself, but it's not the last opportunity to raise an issue. So really what we want to focus on moving forward is how we leverage the list of issues as best we can and the work we need to make sure that all the issues we want covered are covered in the review and beyond. The list that we have is a result of all the hard work that you all did, the reports that people submitted, the information people provided during the in-person briefings and the lobbying people did on their own, both in Geneva and just by sending emails. To us, like I said, the network, or like Yolande said, the network also went to Geneva to represent organizations and issues, organizations that were not able to make it there themselves. Let's see. I want to say a little bit about why issues were covered or not covered. And I guess the answer is that we really don't know. What I think it's safe to say is that some of the issues that did not make the list were some of the more politically thorny issues, like abortion, political prisoners, this issue of freedom of expression as it affects Palestinian students, or then maybe issues that just had not been on their radar previously and that they needed to learn a little bit more about. That's the best of what I can surmise. But again, I believe that the important question for us now is how we make the most use of the issue, of the list of issues as it stands, and how what plans we have to supplement it to make sure that the important work we're doing is not left out of the review process itself, and that when issues are addressed, they're addressed in the way that we want them addressed. So a couple things on how we might make the most of the issue, make the most of the list of issues and the review, but leverage it to gain concrete wins back home in our communities and to change the public discourse and understanding around those issues to reflect the human rights perspective, because ultimately we use these international human rights mechanisms so that we can gain wins here at home in our communities. So we see them as a tool that we use and leverage as best we can so that we can achieve change here at home. One thing people can start doing and that we've done in the past around CERD and the Universal Periodic Review is to use the list of issues and to start planning to use the shadow reporting process and the upcoming review of the U.S. to raise awareness about issues you're working on and to do community education on how you discuss that issue from a human rights perspective. And we saw groups do this effectively around the Universal Periodic Review, and I can think of the people doing work around sex work, how they used one recommendation very effectively to raise awareness and to galvanize the community of people doing work in that area. And we also saw it around CERD. CERD is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, it's also called ICERD. And we saw people use it on a range of issues, including juvenile detention, and really using this international platform to shame not just the federal government, but in some cases a local government. And that's an effective way of leveraging global attention, if you will, or the perception of global attention on a local issue. And we can do this with the current list of issues. For example, there are several questions on immigration, and we can use the list of issues to strengthen the current discourse on immigration reform, and particularly to highlight issues that we think might be left out of comprehensive immigration reform that might need to be augmented, so things like immigrants with a criminal offense. That's something that was raised on the list of issues that people could use to augment conversations or to strengthen the conversations on immigration reform or racial profiling. People could also do it with domestic violence. There's a specific question on
using what kinds of funds are available for domestic violence services. And we just saw in the news that as a result of the sequester, funds for domestic violence services have been cut and they haven't been refunded. So that's another thing that people could right now be using the list of issues to leverage attention. There were a number of questions on prison conditions, and we could link those to some of the hunger strikes that have been happening in this country, most recently in Virginia, but we've had them in Georgia and I believe in Texas, of prisoners using hunger strikes, much like is happening in Guantanamo, to protest prison conditions. So that's one thing, using the list of issues today to raise awareness and the build-up to the shadow reporting and the review process to raise awareness and do education. But then I think the second part of that is how do we supplement the list so that either we augment information that's already on the list or we make sure that issues that were left out are included in the review itself or that issues are addressed in the way that we want them best addressed. And the one concrete opportunity we have before the review itself is the shadow reporting process. And I'll talk a little bit more about the shadow reporting process, the concretes of it, how we see that happening in a little bit. But I also want to encourage people to see this whole process as an organizing process. Because even if an issue is not raised in the list of issues, people could think about doing some work around reports that were submitted. So we always encourage people when they submit reports to write reports in a way that would be useful for the Human Rights Committee, but that you can also use that report here at home. So, for example, there was a report submitted on sexual violence against women in the military. That was one of the issues that did not make the list of issues. However, just yesterday, the Pentagon released a report showing that there's been a significant increase in sexual assaults in the military. So, again, another opportunity to raise awareness and do some organizing and to help push to make sure that in the review, the issue itself is covered. And I raise these few examples, but for every question raised in the list of issues, you could do the same kind of work. So now, moving forward, the next step of the process is a shadow reporting process. Now, before I continue on that, I just want to pause and ask Jamila and Nash, should I go into the process of the shadow reporting now, or should I wait till we talk about next steps?
Thanks, Adrian. I think we want to give a chance for folks to ask any questions or make brief comments before we move on to the next item agenda. If there be no questions and comments, then we will move to the next steps. But I thought you covered a lot of issues. You talked about a lot of issues, and I'm sure there will be some questions people may have. So if you have a question, Yolanda, can you just repeat the instructions on how people can unmute themselves?
Yolanda may be having problems getting unmuted or a delay, but I think it's star one.
Thank you, Ajim. It is star one, and so they can press that for me to recognize them in the queue. And I've unmuted Stephanie to go ahead.
Hi, Stephanie Ferry here. Thanks so much for holding this call. I had a question, and there may not be an answer to this one. You mentioned that the committee members I think it happens each time, a little overwhelmed with the volume of information that they're getting from different organizations. And I was just wondering, from any questions they asked or discussions that you had with them, is there any way to determine how they are setting the priorities, what they think are the main issues to address? Any indicators at all?
this is Jamil Dakwar. I can try to answer this question, in fact, because it's not, there's no formal procedure or no formal rules for how they pick, but there are a number of issues that there's like a standard for any list of questions, whether it's about structural, human rights structural issues within every country, every state, and you can see this across every single list of questions that's sent to your government. They also go, obviously, by the articles and the way that the covenant is basically covering a number of issues and articles, and they in fact divide the task force, the committee's task force, to cover different articles of the covenant. There are also a number of issues that are raised in previous reviews. So the last time the U.S. Was before the committee was in 2006. This is when the U.S. Received a number of recommendations, and normally the committee goes back to those themes and issues that were raised not only in the previous review. Some issues are actually raised in the very initial review, so that's something that they keep on. And then they consider additional issues that are raised by civil society. They even take issues that are not necessarily where presented to them in a formal way. If they are other sources or sometimes more activist committee members who have more access to information and on the particularly on the U.S. So that's kind of more or less on how they do it. And then in each article of the covenant, they have general comments where they expanded on the interpretation of the treaty, and they have made their views on almost each and every article of the covenant. What does that mean in terms of the state and government obligations? So they try through those list of questions to raise those issues and to cover as many of those issues, and those general comments are usually an indication of the interest of the committee in drafting those and adopting these issues and the questions. But again, there is not there's not one way to do this, and that's why the list, as was mentioned earlier by Adrian, is not the end. It's not something that is complete or perfect. There are a number of ways that we could improve it moving forward, and that's exactly what we would like to discuss in the next few minutes that we have left on the call.
Thanks, Jamil, and thank you, Stephanie. Please press the pound sign to lower your hand. And our next question is from Eric Tarz. Go ahead, Eric.
Thanks. This is Eric Tarz at the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, and I just wanted to share a little bit about how we're using the list of issues in our advocacy. So we were lucky enough to get the main issue that we're pressing, which is criminalization of homelessness, raised in the list of issues. And we just had a meeting earlier this week with the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness to get them to actually host a meeting with the Department of Justice, HUD, Health and Human Services, some other federal agencies, to try to prompt them on what their response to the issue should be, both in terms of a written response. We're going to prepare what we think would be an adequate written response and suggest it to them, as well as give them some things that they could do in response to the question to actually make themselves look better. And so these are, things like issuing guidance, reforming different regulations that they have the power to do within the agencies themselves. Since a lot of the issues that we're dealing with are actually ones that take place on a local level, they can't directly affect them, but there is more that they could do to promote a human rights approach to these issues on the local level by actions that they take at the federal level. So we're still in the process of planning that larger meeting, but we do have the commitment from the government to host that, and I think that's, the meeting itself is going to be very much focused on our domestic policy objectives, but we're using the occasion of the list of issues to kind of prompt and push the discussion there. So I thought that would maybe give folks some inspiration on different ways they could use the list of issues in their own advocacy.
That's fantastic.
Thanks, Eric.
I think at this point, if we could actually transition to our last item, and then we'll have some time left for Q&A at the end as well. The last item that we wanted to do was just to share some resources and some next steps. So we'll be hearing from AGM about the shadow reporting process and upcoming trainings we'll be holding. And then we'll be hearing from Lauren about state-level advocacy, and then from Mary about the upcoming Day of Action. But in addition, I just wanted to let folks know that there will be a training here on the West Coast by the International Resource Center on June 11th and 12th in California, which will be a session on a two-day session on using human rights forums to advance human and civil rights. And there will be a session in particular on the ICC PR review process. So keep a lookout for more information on that. And I'm going to hand it over to Ejim now to go over some of the shadow reporting specifics.
Just to reiterate, Nas, before we go to Ejim, that the U.S. government is organizing a consultation on the ICC PR in light of the list of questions. Some of you, or especially if you're on the ICCPR list, received this information. We will be holding a prep call, which will take place on Monday, May 20th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We will send this information over email on the listservs. We would encourage you to subscribe to the ICCPR list if you would like to get updates on the ICCPR review process. The idea behind holding this prep call is to make sure that we have a coordinated agenda going into the meeting on May 30th, which will be in D.C. between 1 and 3 p.m. And again, as was mentioned earlier, to try to be as effective as possible in covering as many issues and influence the U.S. replies to the list of questions. This is only one dimension of the work that we will be doing. There are a number of other dimensions, including state and local activism and advocacy, and which will be discussed by our colleagues. So, AGM, do you want to give us a quick update on the shadow reports?
Yes, and I'll be brief, and then people can ask questions. So the task force is going to be taking charge of helping coordinate shadow reports. And as we said earlier, the shadow reports are really to augment and supplement information provided during the reports that inform the list of issues and to help shape the agenda for the review itself. But we also are encouraging people to create documents that they can use here at home for continued advocacy beyond the review. Now, we're kicking off the process, if you will, in early June with a series of trainings. We'll have a training call on the ICCPR shadow reporting, I believe that first week in June. And then NAS and will send out information with a specific date and time. And NAS just mentioned another training on the West Coast that will be June 11th and 12th, and I think they're hoping that will be webcast as well. We are also providing, the task force has been working to create templates that will help people in writing the shadow reports. The committee has, in several conversations, I can't emphasize this enough, the committee has really asked us to provide, to do shorter reports and to supplement information. In other words, not to repeat information that they've already received, except if we have updated information on the issue. So we are encouraging people to do shorter 5 to 7 page reports for the individual submissions, issue submissions. And we'll be providing templates for both the individual issue submissions and for people who want to cover more than one issue to help the process. We are encouraging groups to work in clusters. Now, this is something that's worked very well in the past. We saw it work very well for CERD and the previous CERD review and for the Universal Periodic Review, and it worked well for the list of issue report submissions. So we're really encouraging people to work in clusters for the shadow reporting process. And I think we've asked people to let us know if they're planning to submit issues. And in the past, we've asked people to volunteer if they want to lead a cluster report, but we'll be sharing that information so people know how to plug in, or, very importantly, to volunteer to help coordinate cluster reports. Just as important as clustering, working together, is that people share information with each other. Sometimes we find that a number of different groups have raised the same issue but didn't have an opportunity to talk to each other, and some of those groups might have decided just to sign on to a cluster report instead of producing their own report on the same issue. So I think it's important in terms of using our resources, but it's also something we've heard from the committee that they really appreciate us working together and clustering, having cluster reports, working together and collaborating on the civil society side as much as possible. And as Nazrina reported for the briefings we did in Geneva, they were very impressed, and I think we were very happy that we were able to collaborate and work with each other. And I think that made the most use of our time there. And the same goes for writing shadow reports. That makes the most use of our time and resources when we work together and collaborate and share information. So, like I said, it kicks off in June and essentially goes until 6 weeks before the actual review process. But we'll have a timeline that we'll be sharing with you to help inform that process. And I'll stop there. If people have other questions about the shadow reporting, then I can answer them later. Oh, sorry, one last thing. We're really encouraging people to build on the work that's happened previously, both with the Universal Periodic Review and with CERD in the past, so that we're making sure that every engagement and use of these international mechanisms is building on the other. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you so much, AJM. We'll hear from Lauren and Mary and then open it up for questions. Lauren? I think it'll just take a second to get her clicked off of mute. Hold on.
Lauren, do you mind pressing star one just to be identified?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. We just wanted to let you know the task force has been working on drafting a template letter for folks to send to local and state level authorities, both legislatures and also attorney general's offices, both to educate folks about the ICCPR review that's coming up in the process and encourage those folks to get involved by providing examples of good policies, regulations, actions that they've taken, or perhaps on the other side, negative policies or actions that they see that they want to share. So we're working on finalizing a letter that we can circulate as a draft template, and anyone who's interested in getting involved in helping with that or seeing what our draft looks like, you can contact me, Lauren Bartlett. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Mary?
Hi. Hello?
Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know if you could hear me. And just to build on what Lauren was saying, in addition to the form of letter that we're going to have available, we're also going to try and enlist all of our allies as possible to participate in a nationwide day of action on a state level, and try to have a lot of publicity about that, because I believe that it will help, and we believe that it will help our legislators to focus on the communication that we're giving them. And also, in terms of public education, it seems as though most of our groups, at least this is true for my group, the Vermont Worker Center, have not utilized the rights that are secured under the ICCPR to the extent that we might, mostly because our grassroots base really doesn't know about them. So I think that a nationwide campaign is something that can raise awareness and also raise the idea with the federal government that we are all connected, that our causes are interconnected, not independent, and that the ICCPR embraces many human rights that they have an obligation to tell state governments about. So whether it is marches or letter writing campaigns or letters to the editor or rallies or whatever kind of grassroots local actions that your organizations might be able to plan either on a community, statewide basis, we're hoping that we can all join together and do this on one day, garner a lot of publicity for the ICCPR so that we can further hold the government accountable for their obligations under that. So we will be sending a call to action letter, if you will. And as Lauren said with the letter to the administration, if anyone is interested in seeing that ahead of time, because our day of action will be September 23rd, but of course we want to get the letter out as far as possible in advance so that we can all start planning creative events to emphasize our human rights. So please contact me. I'm Mary Garish, and if you don't know my name or my email address, you can, I'm sure, get it through the Human Rights Network. The other thing that we're hoping to do is to share a list of the types of actions that some of our organizations are going to take, so that maybe we can each have an action that's a little different than our normal game plan that might cause us, the press, to give us even a little bit more attention. So I think at this point I will turn it back over to Jim for any questions.
Thank you so much, folks. We're at noon now. If we could open it up for questions for about 5 to 10 minutes. Sorry for taking everyone a little bit over, but let's see if there are any questions.
We don't currently have any in the queue, but while anyone decides on a question, just to follow up on a couple points in regards to next steps and available resources, AJM mentioned that we have our first shadow reporting call coming up in June. And the specific date of that is June 6th. And the time is to be determined, but it will be between 3 and 5 p.m. And this is essentially an introduction to the process, a nuts and bolts piece. And so for anyone who's new to the process, this would be key to participate in this. Or if you want to get started early and want to do a refresher, it will be important to participate in this call. And we have a second training call coming up later in the summer, in July. So we will send out information for that. The other piece that we didn't mention was that we have an NGO submission chart, and that essentially lists all of the submissions that were made through the network and otherwise to the Human Rights Committee. And it is organized by different treaty articles, but also some themes.
And we are using this chart to, one, help you identify where your issue is covered in the list, and for others to see what issues other people have covered and whether or not it was included in the list. And we hope for it to both help facilitate you coordinating working together, but also clustering the list and the submissions that we make. We are really encouraging you to work together. This is a very crucial point that AJM made and worth reiterating, both based on our experience in Geneva and having to, package all of those issues into such a short period of time, and leaving enough time for committee members to actually ask questions so we can get insight about what we need to follow up on. And the other piece itself, the committee itself has asked that we, submit shorter reports, less reports, because they were overwhelmed by the volume that they received for the list of issues. And lastly, I'm encouraging you to send back those two questions that we've sent out over the course of a couple weeks about what your plans are for moving forward. That will both help us coordinate and help cluster, as well as help you see what other people are working on and how better to engage collectively as well as on your own.
Great. Thank you so much. And I think it would just be extremely helpful if folks could, in particular, respond to Yolande's request about what their plans are, and just, keep us in the loop so we can try our best to help in coordination.
So we have one question, actually. So, Ed, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, this is Edward Hatchbrook again. I really appreciate everything that Jamil and Yolanda and Naz and everyone in the network has done on the coordination. In terms of follow-up, I definitely got the sense, as you've said, that the committee doesn't want repetitive materials. But one thing I noticed in Geneva, sitting in on some of the reviews of other countries that they were conducting, was that there were members who were asking questions during those reviews of things that weren't on the list of issues and that were coming directly out of more recent developments that they'd received from NGOs quite late in the game. So people shouldn't be afraid to submit new information if there really is new information, even about things that aren't on the list of issues, as long as it's genuinely new and not repetitive, and that can have an impact and get raised in the review.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, I think you are encouraged to send in updates, information that is new, that was maybe recent developments in the past year. As you all know, the U.S. periodic report itself was submitted in December 2011. So a lot of that information is not current. And just more importantly, as was mentioned earlier, once we get the U.S. replies to the list, there's another opportunity to try to provide information and additional updates that is not necessarily included in the U.S. replies. And that's something that committee members will appreciate, will use in the questions and the dialogue and during the review.
So unless we have no other questions in the queue, and unless Jamil and Naz, you want to add something, I wanted to go ahead and wrap up.
Sounds good. Thank you, Yolanda.
Yes, thank everybody for joining us today, and we look forward to additional calls, and we will definitely send additional reminders for all the things that we mentioned on the call. I know we've had too many details here, but we'll make sure to get you the information. But please join the listserv and get in touch if you have any comments or questions.
Right, and join the network as well. You can do that by going to the to www.ushrnetwork.org. And there you'll find a wealth of resources both on the ICCPR treaty and the process itself. And we will be sending out shortly a copy of this recording, as well as links to the resources we talked about today. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Feel like it, but oh my gosh,
you're great. I didn't realize that it. Yeah, too many things, too many intangibles, too many. One, Jamil at the last minute couldn't, said he wasn't feeling well from facilities, so I was only with him the whole time, didn't have the time to set up, and the lines weren't enough for people to get on. Yeah, maybe this will create a demand where they're like, oh man, I should call in earlier and do things. Yeah.